Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Barring penalty, this is it. Trips to the right. Blanc is on the wing. Amendola, then Edelman to the outside. Dobson to the left. Shotgun snap to Brady. Retreats in the pocket. Steps up to the end zone. The throw will be intercepted. Lester has it. A flag goes down. A flag is thrown. Gronkowski, perhaps interfered with, or at least held by Keekly in the middle of the end zone. There will be another play here in Charlotte.
Oh, man, it takes guts to throw that call.
Or is it on the Patriots? There will not be another play based on the reaction of the Panthers. Well, the flag was thrown.
I need to know what the call is.
And again, with referee Cleet Blakeman simply announcing that there was no foul on the play, he's being tracked down by Tom Brady, who's seeking explanation. He wants the explanation that we didn't get.
And Brady is serving him up right now. And good for Tom Brady.
Well, there you hear it. The call from Bob Soucy and Scott Zolak at the end of the game on Monday night. The penalty flag that was not a penalty, where it appeared Rob Gronkowski was given a bear hug in the end zone by former BC Eagle Luke Kuechly. Tom Brady's pass intercepted, the flag picked up, and the Patriots losing to the Panthers 24-20 on Monday night. Welcome into the Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium. Here for Patriots Playbook. It'll be a nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday. My name is Scott Sudikoff, filling in for John Rook this afternoon, who in a couple of hours is going to be headed off to the Virgin Islands. So he'll have a nice weekend of sun and sand. Well, he'll be working a bit too, but that's why I am here.
I doubt that.
He has at least 3 basketball games that he'll have to work. Other than that, though, I think he'll be enjoying some poolside fun, hopefully, and maybe some oceanside fun. So Scott Sudikoff here with you. And as I said on the crossover with the guys, 2 hours of calls and emails probably about what occurred at the end of the game on Monday night. Of course, we can also look forward to the Broncos on Sunday night here at Gillette Stadium. Really, no rest for the weary for the Patriots after the Monday night game to play Sunday night against the Broncos. And you can email in at webradio@patriots.com. Of course, you can call on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or 855-PATS-500. And we can talk about what happened on Monday night. You may have heard my brief opinion on the crossover in that I don't agree.
Defending the refs, Sudikoff.
I am not.
Shameful.
I am not defending the referees. That play, standing alone, any time in the game, should be a penalty. Gronkowski was interfered with in the end zone, not given a chance to go back to the football and make a play on it. That being said, in my mind, I don't think Gronkowski would have made the catch. That's just my opinion. Obviously, we have no idea because he had no chance to go after it, and that's why it's a penalty. So it's just in my head, I'm not as worked up as some fans might be about it because I look at it and say, you know what, it wasn't a great pass. Gronkowski was headed to the back of the end zone. The pass was to the front of the end zone. Probably the Patriots would have been bailed out if they threw a penalty there and had an extra play. Again, a rule is a rule. It should be called by the officials. The scary thing is you don't want officials just to make calls in a vacuum like that. Oh, well, this affects the outcome of the game, so we're going to pick up the flag. That was uncatchable because it was intercepted. They can't do that. They have to make the play, make the call the penalty, and the Patriots would have had an extra play. And obviously the Patriots still would have had to either punch it in from the 1 yard line if they called a pass interference. They could have potentially called a holding or illegal contact, something that would have maybe only moved it up 5 or 10 yards. But either way, the Patriots would have had to, of course, one more play to get it into the end zone. So they were robbed of that opportunity. But again, I'm not as worked up as I'm sure some of the callers might be or some of the emails might be in terms of Patriots. In the end, they lost the game. The Panthers, Cam Newton, a great drive at the end of that fourth quarter. they played very well, and they show that they're pretty much for real in the NFC. Now they're 7-3. The Patriots are 7-3, and the Patriots have a short week to get ready for the Denver Broncos. So web radio at patriots.com if you want to email in. And then the number again, 855-PATS-500 if you want to call in. We already have some emails that have come in, and this first one coming from a pastor from Montana. We'll say hello to John F. Godfrey. He says, one thing that I believe is totally missing the point of the blown call is to say that the Patriots should have scored at other times, or how well the Panthers played. The fact of the matter is that the last call was blown, acknowledged by so many professionals, and as I said, I agree that it is a penalty, it should have been called, and that may have well changed the outcome of the game. The Patriots could have beat them by a lot more, but you can't excuse the blown call by saying that they should have played better earlier. Right, it's obviously a 60-minute game. Every play contributes to the game, but the Patriots were in a position to potentially to win the game on that last drive, and a play that 9 times out of 10 is called a penalty isn't called there. So the Patriots were robbed of an extra opportunity at the end of that game. 855-PATS-500, that's the Ace Ticket Hotline. We can go to that right now. We have a call up on the board. We'll talk to Sean, who is up in the Northwest, the Great Northwest in Vancouver. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Great, Scott. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Well, I don't want to nitpick about the call either, because the way I see it is whatever the refs do is beyond the Patriots' control. That's not something we really can plan for or try and fix in the future. And also, the way I see it too is it's twice this season that Patriots have lost at the end of the game due to controversial calls, and that just tells me this team is in it every game. They're a good team. What I would like to nitpick about is the escapability of Cam Newton, and I know he's a great player and he does that a lot, but the Patriots really messed up a couple of times in the game on that, and that's something I'm sure they're aware of and they planned for, and it just didn't work out. They let him go, and that's unacceptable. I'm concerned, especially for this Denver game, about the secondary. I don't think anybody will know the health of their players in the secondary. They lost three of them in that game, three starters. They didn't have in the fourth quarter. Hopefully, Tlaib and maybe Bernard and maybe Gregory could be back. Who knows? But that's going to be problematic with the high passing of the Broncos. So that's a concern I have for. That's my main concern for the next game.
Well, Sean, on your first point about Cam Newton, I mean, first of all, you just got to chalk it up that he is just a freak athlete, and the way he's able to elude rushers. I think it was that third quarter where it seemed as if three different Patriots had him sacked, and he still got away, still had enough energy to run for a first down. And it's one of those plays that you shake your head at the defense and say you have to make a play, but on the other end, you just have to give a lot of credit to a guy that's able to make such a spectacular move. And Cam Newton ran for 62 yards Monday night, 8.9 yards per carry. I think that play that I'm looking at was his long run of 24 yards. And then he can throw the football well as well, 19 of 28 for 209 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Cam Newton is a top rate quarterback in this league right now, and Panthers finally, after a couple of years, are getting things together. Now 7-3 on the year after a couple of seasons where they were a bit down. And on your second point, Sean, talking about the secondary going into the Broncos game, and yeah, that is obviously a huge concern. Where you see Aqib Talib came out of the game late on Monday night. Don't know how much of that is injury or how much of that is performance. I would lean towards injury because, I mean, even after Steve Smith made a couple of plays back-to-back and Aqib Talib and him got mixed up a bit, he sat out one play and was back in. And they realized
he's playing well in the third quarter too, and that was really helping the Patriots. And they did, without Talib, and they just couldn't stop the Panthers' drive, and that's a lot about it. But those third downs that Newton was running. I mean, yeah, he's amazing and it's just an incredible play to watch, but you just can't let it happen. You have to make sure you have a couple of spies on him.
Well, here's a number that is something that they obviously want to work on. Third down, Carolina was 8-for-11 in that game Monday night. So that's a lot of times where the Patriots defense could have gotten off the field and, you know, gotten the ball back to Tom Brady. So 8-of-11, that's I would assume a coach looks at that and says that's unacceptable. You cannot allow a team to convert 8-of-11 third down opportunities in a game. You're not going to win many games if you give that many extra first downs to a team.
Right, and no turnovers either for the first time, so that hurts as well.
Yeah, right, no turnovers for Carolina. He had the fumble by Stephen Ridley. Obviously, the interception at the end by Tom Brady goes in the books as a turnover, but that was, you know, the last play of the game, in essence. So any other nitpicks you got, Sean, from that game, from Monday night? Anything other than the obvious? Anything that stood out to you?
No, I think the Patriots played well. I mean, they really geared down and stopped the run, so I'm very optimistic about that and going forward, because that was a concern. And offensively, they played really well. I'd like in the next game to see more of a two-back set with Ridley and Vereen, because I'd like to see all their top talent on the field at the same time and give them more versatility and really kind of take advantage of what the defense is throwing them. Like you have Gronk and Amendola and Dobson and Vereen and Ridley all there at once, it could really mess things up for the Broncos.
All right, Sean, thanks so much for the call.
Thanks. Take care.
And Sean makes a great point about the offense as well, is that, and obviously this was a point that was made going into the game, and the point made by the broadcasters and ESPN on Monday night, is that the Patriots, for the first time all year, had an offense put together that something that they envisioned with Gronkowski, Amendola, Shane Vereen back out there, Ridley at running back. You know, the pieces were together. So offensively, the team performed on Monday night. Total yards of 390, passing 283, rushing 107, yards per rush 4.3. That's a very good number. Yards per pass over 7 yards. The one fumble by Ridley, the real turnover, again, Tom Brady's interception at the end, counts as a turnover in the books. So the Patriots, you know, the offense looked good, and talked about a few of the numbers defensively. 8-of-11 on third down for Carolina. That is something that you're not going to win too many games, again, if you leave give that team an extra opportunity, teams extra opportunities to work the way down the field. 855-PATS-500 if you want to call in. Also 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Email us at webradio@patriots.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter. That is @Sudikoff, S-U-D-I-K-O-F-F. If you want any questions and you want to tweet those in, you are more than welcome to do so. Here on Patriots Playbook, it's a Nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday. Scott Sudikoff filling in for John Rook, who will be on a plane shortly and heading down to St. Thomas, the Virgin Islands.
I actually just got word. I texted John, letting him know the playbook was indeed on the air. He's currently in San Juan.
He's already in San Juan.
On a layover on his way to St. Thomas.
Wow.
He's probably sipping on, he's probably half cocked right now. He's probably in the bag.
He's probably got his phone on the Patriots app. He's probably listening.
He's probably
right
listening.
And he's nitpicking us.
Along with us. Yeah,
nitpicking us.
So I told him to call in, so he might call in and give us his take on this call. So we'll see. We'll see if he can get some cell reception down.
All right,
San Juan.
That'd be fantastic. So a little bit of a tease there, potential of John Rook calling in a little bit later here on Patriots Playbook. Let's go back to the emails, webradio@patriots.com. Have an email from Brian. Says he was listening to a radio station on Tuesday on the Patriots app. I think that's probably WEEI.
Yeah, that would have been Patriots Monday on a Tuesday.
Patriots Monday on a Tuesday.
Yep.
One caller said that the home team always seems to get the big decisions go their way, and he quoted the Panthers and Jets games, amongst others. Which got me to thinking, how many big calls have gone the Pats' way at Gillette? I think that these decisions even themselves out over a season. What do we think? Although the officials make mistakes, if they weren't on the field, we wouldn't have a game to talk about. Let's move on and beat Denver. I like that viewpoint there from Brian. Although the officials make mistakes, if they weren't on the field, there would be no game to talk about. Very interesting. Saying no officials, no football. I guess that is true.
Tony Brown Personal foul. 69. Offense. He was giving them the business. He played with them.
Oh, and I, Kevin, I absolutely love that. Because you know who the two teams playing in that game was?
Probably Maryland.
Maryland and North Carolina State. I was watching that game live when that happened.
I was at the Boston College NC State game this past Saturday, and he did the game.
Oh, man.
And I was telling all my friends about it.
Oh, there's a movement on Twitter. It's a hashtag, where in the world is Ron Cherry? Every single week, it's always great to find out where he is because he is a very entertaining college referee.
And he's a great referee, too.
Yeah, oh, he's great.
He's on the ball. Put him in for Cleet Blakeman. Start the movement.
And going back to that game where that call was made, if I remember correctly, Maryland won that game like 37-0. And I think that call came at the end of the game where, you know, it's a blowout. So I think that's partly why he just went, eh, giving him the business. Stop doing it. Game's over. That's the finale of the season. So that's excellent job there. All right, let's go back to what Brian was saying. Big decisions go the way of the home team a lot of times. I mean, that is just the way it is. Maybe not as much in football. I feel like basketball, it happens because you're much smaller arena and the officials are hearing the crowd and they'll blow the whistle and want to appease the crowd and get that reaction. So I think basketball is probably where it happens most. Football, I mean, it has to happen. I think you just get sucked into the moment. Unfortunately, officials do occasionally get sucked into the moment. I don't want to say they're afraid of what fans are going to do to them, because they shouldn't have to be. That's if they're fearing what might happen to them, then that's obviously another story in and of itself. So I agree. Home teams tend to get big decisions go their way occasionally, and you would think it would even itself out. You play 8 games at home. You play 8 games on the road. If you're the Buffalo Bills, you play 1 game in Toronto. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but and yeah, it'll even itself out. It happens. More emails at webradio@patriots.com, and this is coming from Sven from Sweden. SportsCenter had an interesting piece on the last play, the Sports Science. According to their calculations, Gronk would have been able to get back to the ball, but he had to fight with the safety for the ball. And yeah, that's pretty much my point earlier, that Gronkowski was most likely not going to make that catch where that ball was positioned and where he was in the end zone. He wasn't given the opportunity to potentially make a play, and that is why it's a penalty. And again, my thought is I'm not as worked up about it, because I look at it as Carolina earned the win. Patriots played very well as well. They earned a win too. I think both teams. It's one of those games where one team that lost, you go, that's a tough loss because you played well enough to win that game. So I think Sports Science has it right. You would have had a fight for the football with the safety at the front of the end zone. And yeah, maybe he's able to tip it up, cause a deflection, ball goes up in the air, he rips it away, and it's a touchdown. Very possible. Another nitpick here from Sven. My nitpick for the game was the cameraman who missed some plays and couldn't hold their cameras.
The camera work was awful.
That happened. It did happen a couple of times where they were zoomed in inside the 20 or inside the 10-yard line, and then the camera just didn't – I think it was hit the microphone. The camera didn't pan far enough back in time, and you kind of missed the play at the back of the end zone. You know what? I'm not going to nitpick a cameraman too much. For the most part, those guys that work NFL games and – Most professional type setting, even college games, they do a heck of a job. It's not an easy job to stand behind a camera and for 3 hours and do it. Yeah, I know it's their job and that's the point, but occasionally they will miss some plays. So I'm not going to get too worked up about that. More nitpicks on the email, webradio@patriots.com. This is from Lashana. How in the world can you call it a bailout as if we made the linebacker hold Gronkowski? It wouldn't have been a bailout if called. It would have been a bonehead play by the Panthers. If the pass is thrown a little higher and there's no way the refs don't call it, as we the recipients of a bailout then? Okay, no. I understand what this email means, and I think the confusing bailout term is that just bailed out in the sense that, like we were saying before on the crossover, is that that pass probably wasn't going to be caught. That is why it would be deemed a bailout. That being said, it is a penalty. Gronkowski didn't have the opportunity to make a play on it. And yes, it would be a bonehead play by the Panthers as well for Luke Kuechly to hug Gronkowski in the middle of the end zone.
Tell you what, that flag would have never picked up, would have been picked up if this guy was doing the game either.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
The defender was just overpowered.
No, but for as much as people give Ed Hockley crap, he never loses control of a game. And I think, honestly, I don't think he steps in there and picks that flag up and overrules his back judge.
And at the very least, he would have given us a very detailed description of it.
That's another valid point. You know, he's one of the more talkative referees, and he gets a lot of flack for it because his games seem to go a little longer because his mic's always on. People joke. But I'd much rather hear a guy who likes to hear himself speak if that means that I get an explanation of what the heck is going on and you don't have 75,000 people in a stadium and 15, 20 million people worldwide all standing there, arms out in the air, wondering what on earth did we just see.
And the uncatchable portion of it, in and of itself, as I've been saying, yeah, I don't think Gronkowski was going to catch that ball. But doesn't that rule really just apply to balls thrown way up out and out of bounds, out of the end zone? I didn't know if it was a throw that was short, usually. I mean, for a referee just to say, yeah, that's uncatchable, definitively, is crap, right? It's definitively, that was not uncatchable. It was in the field of play. Gronkowski could have potentially gotten there. And as my opinion, I keep saying, I don't think he would have, but he never had the opportunity to. Another email. I'm not sure if this is a name that I'm allowed to say on the air, so I'm just going to let it go. It's a very interesting one.
Is it from strippers?
No. Well, I mean, it could apply to a stripper, maybe, but not sure. About the robbed call, with all due respect, you are wrong. Well, I've heard that a lot. Don't worry. This is the exact same play they called against the Giants in 2011. Go back and watch Gronk's touchdown. It's the exact same route. It was not an underthrown pass. It was a curl route, and Gronk was held. My nitpick would be Aqib Talib. He lost it. But a lot of football left. This is a good team. Hopefully, barring any more injuries, they can clinch a playoff bye. Okay, so the first point, I'm wrong. Happens a lot, so don't feel too bad about it. I don't. Same play called against the Giants in 2011. I'm just trying to rack my brain and remember that. But I mean, I get it. It's the same type of play. It just from my eye, I can't be wrong. First of all, it's my opinion. But to me, I don't think he would have gotten back to the football. And if he had gotten back to the football, he was got to fight for the ball, which is very possible he could have made the play. All right, we're going to go back to the Ace Ticket Hotline. And as promised, we have Mr. John Rook calling from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Wow, that sounds great, John. How's it in San Juan, Puerto Rico?
Noisy. It's very noisy. I can't understand why it's so noisy here. Maybe it's because everybody wants to celebrate and get into the sun or dance the reggae or I don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's just noisy here, that's all.
So you're down there getting over to the St. Thomas Virgin Islands for a nice 3-day basketball tournament. There are worse places to go watch basketball, right?
There are, definitely worse places to go. Somebody has to do it. I know that no one is crying for me, but this is part of the job, so much as we have to, get up at the crack of dawn to make a flight into a frozen Milwaukee or a blustery Chicago on a winter morning, this is kind of the payback for all of that stuff.
And your Friars might see my Terrapins at the end of that tournament. That'll be a fun game potentially.
Yeah, it's entirely possible, I think. So, you know, hopefully we can live up to our part of the bargain and get there.
I don't know if we will though. So, I'll keep my fingers crossed for that.
I saw them play a couple of nights ago against Oregon State, and the president's appearance jinxed them, I think.
Yeah, they said they didn't really care about him being there. But all right, let's get to the task at hand: the Patriots, of course, and that final call. I saw you a bit on Twitter and on Facebook, and you obviously did not agree with the call, as most people did. What is your real problem with what happened on Monday night at the end of that game?
The bottom line is that I have never been one to think that an official should decide a game one way or the other. The players have to decide it, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, what have you. There's just no way in hell that I would ever, as an official myself, you know, for many years, not obviously at a professional level, but I've never thought that I would ever in any way, form, way, shape, or form, want to be someone who would decide a game and then the game be over and not have the players decide it. Now, there was a call that could have been made. Remember, there was a flag thrown. So clearly the back judge saw something, and you know, whether you interpret it as defensive holding or whether you interpret it as interference based on the rule book, and I know there's several different ways that, you know, the rule book can be interpreted, there was something there. So the right thing to do would have been, at least in my opinion, play one more down. Now, that doesn't mean the Patriots are going to score. And, yes, I am a firm believer that the Patriots lost that game way earlier than just that last play because of the red zone fumble and a few other mistakes that they made. But in this particular instance, I absolutely cringe every time I see officials' whistles or lack thereof decide games.
So, in your opinion, let's say a flag wasn't thrown on that play, and then you saw the replay and you saw Gronkowski being held, would you have a better feeling about that? Just because if he threw the flag, he saw something. How do you overturn that, I guess, is the main, you know, main problem.
Scott, that's a legitimate question, but I would tell you that if they didn't throw anything, then I would say that whoever the officials were back there would certainly deserve a reprimand from the league, if not a suspension, for not doing something, because then clearly there was a violation there. So, you know, and all these people and, you know, other people around the country, they all say that, well, you know, Gronk couldn't have come back and caught the ball. I understand where you could make that case, but problem was he never had a chance to show
right.
it. That's the whole idea. So, you know, if he didn't throw the flag, then the official deserved to be suspended or at least dock the game check or something, because there was contact.
Right.
And it was egregious, and it was obvious, and it was on, you know, national television, worldwide TV for everybody to see, and the officials swallowed their whistle. And that's a crime. That's just a crime. That should not happen, and the league should privately, I don't know that they'll ever do it publicly, but the league privately should do something with that officiating crew in my estimation.
And you mentioned some people's opinions, and actually my opinion, just by looking at it, I don't think Gronkowski would have caught the ball. But as you said, he wasn't given the opportunity to catch the ball. I don't understand the uncatchable part of it. It was in the field of play. It was 5 yards, 6 yards away from him. It wasn't as if the pass was 10 yards up and out of bounds, and that's uncatchable. All right, we get that. That was in the field of play. So that doesn't make any sense.
No, it does not. And that's part of the problem that I have. If they're saying that they decided to swallow the whistle, pull the flags up, and go home for the night, because it was an uncatchable ball, that's an incorrect interpretation. It absolutely is. At the very least, then, if it was an uncatchable ball, then there should have been some defensive holding on the play. So I don't know how you can make that determination on the final play of the game. If they're saying it was uncatchable, then, play another down.
Yeah.
Play another down. I mean, they threw the flag. The initial call was there was a penalty on the play. Now, if he had never thrown a flag and they don't do it, well, you know what? That actually probably would have gotten him off. And like I said, even though it would have been egregious and on film review, those referees probably would have been reprimanded, but it probably would have been easier on everybody to take had the flag never been thrown in the first place.
Yeah, I think most people will agree with that viewpoint, John. Any other nitpick from the game on Monday night? Anything else that stands out? I mean, obviously that's the main story that comes out of it.
Yeah, honestly, Scott, the big one that I had, and I didn't get a chance to, I was going to put this out on social media earlier, you know, for people that listen to the show, but I, you know, frankly, my other big nitpick was the pass play on 3rd and 1 at the 8-yard line.
Oh, right,
to settle for a field goal. I mean, come on. We've had this problem unfortunately, with Josh McDaniels all year long, where sometimes these calls come out of the thin blue air, and we're trying to figure out where the hell it came from. You are grinding, and I believe even John Gruden was talking about that on the television broadcast leading as that drive was underway. You're grinding, you're on the ground, you're getting steady yardage. There's no way that blew me away. That just absolutely blew me away, because you're asking, you know, it's the old adage, three things happen when you pass the ball, and two of them are bad. And one of them happened, and it's an incompletion pass. So I don't understand why the play call there. I really don't, because you had at least two runs at it, and certainly they could have had gotten a yard in two different plays. And we know that Tom Brady is obviously very, very efficient at short down yardage plays himself. So that's a huge nitpick. And then I think my third one, probably because I usually go with three every week, My third one probably has to be Ridley's fumble, only because, you know, here's a kid that we've, you know, kind of put our faith in. If not the Patriots' ground game fortunes in, it's clear he can be a number one back based on talent alone. But I don't know how you can continue to play him if he can't hold onto the football. So the Patriots, you know, running game is at a real crossroads, because much as I like LeGarrette Blount, he's not an every down back. He's just not. He doesn't have enough speed, not enough breakaway ability. There's just not enough there, and at least that, on my estimation of what I've seen. He's a great change of pace, short yardage guy, you know, number two guy, but that's about the extent of it. So, you know, Shane Vereen might get an opportunity there, but he's better, you know, in passing situations. So you still need a back, and I don't know what to do about Stephen Ridley anymore, but clearly there's a problem there.
All right, John, thanks so much for calling in from San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I'm sure you'll have a very good time this weekend. You might have to work, but most people don't consider what we do work anyways, right?
Yeah, well, that's also true, but somebody's got to do it.
Exactly.
And thanks for sitting in the chair today. I sure appreciate it.
No problem. Love it. That's John Rook. He was down in San Juan, Puerto Rico, getting ready to head out to the Virgin Islands. He's on a layover. Not a bad place to just hang out for a while and be with the Providence College Friars this weekend for a basketball tournament. So I'm Scott Sudikoff, filling in for him here on the Patriots Playbook. And again, web radio at patriots.com if you want to email your nitpicks in on Monday night's game, and or if you have any thoughts about the game coming up against the Broncos. 855-PATS-500 if you want to call in. You can hit me up on Twitter at Sudikoff, and we'll have more Patriots Playbook on the other side of this break.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team. From Foxborough all the way to Miami, Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Scott Sudikoff filling in for John Rook on a Nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday edition of Patriots Playbook, coming to you from the Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium. Also have producer extraordinaire Kevin Collins behind the glass, pushing all the right buttons, making sure to I sound good, which, I mean, it's easy to do, but Kevin's making it a lot, even better than I can ever imagine.
Appreciate that.
You're welcome, Kevin.
Get no love on the first show, so this will make up for it.
I'm the only guy that looks out for you. I know. So anyways, webradio at patriots.com if you want to email in your nitpicks, or you can call in at 855-PATS-500 to talk about them. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Sudikoff, Sudikoff. Yes, like Sudafed, the cough medicine. Sudikoff, just with an I and not an A. And K-O-F-F and not C. You get it. All right? It's not as if I haven't heard that joke thousands of times. So we'll go back to the emails, and we have one from Jeff in Florida, which sounds great right now, about 30 degrees outside here. The dime defense with Dane Fletcher is a disaster. Fletcher displays no instincts and has been exploited this year by mobile quarterbacks and misdirection plays like screens. Do you agree? Spikes, Hightower, Collins, or someone else may be more capable of making plays based on their better positional awareness. I believe Fletcher is a converted lineman. I believe that is correct as well. I think maybe Kevin can confirm that with me, but Fletcher converted lineman to a linebacker? That sounds familiar. And about the non-penalty Monday, the NFL damaged their credibility, changing the excuse to a simultaneous interception from an uncatchable pass. The lead just made the problem bigger and longer lasting. I'll hit that second point first. I don't know if I saw this in actual writing, but this is exactly what happened, changing it to a simultaneous interception.
He was a defensive end, too, by the way.
So he was.
You hit it on the head.
So he was a lineman.
Per usual.
Jeff hit it on the head. I wasn't completely sure, so that's So he's right.
Yeah, he was like one of those, like, he was like Rob Ninkovich for Montana.
And then, so simultaneous interception would mean that in their eyes, the penalty only occurred when the interception was about to happen, which is clearly not the way it happened, right? I mean, Gronkowski was being held. The pass was maybe halfway there.
Yeah.
That's not simultaneous.
I mean, I threw up a quick screenshot on my Facebook and on Twitter, probably less than an hour after the game, of a clear shot, a screenshot from the game on one of the many replay angles. And not only is the ball in the, you know, not in the defensive back's hands at the time he's getting held, it's not even in the end zone. It's probably about the 5 to 8 yard line, I could probably gauge. So the ball was probably a quarter to a halfway to the defensive back in the end zone by the time, you know, the contact actually happened. And if you watch it even closer, and as you can tell, I've watched this play about 50 million times because I was so irate the other night. DVR back, forth, slow-mo, the whole 9 yards. The defensive back flashes in front of Gronk and Kuechly and almost brushes them as he kind of flashes across them. And that gives you a great idea of how close he is to those two at the start of the pushing from Kuechly. So in other words, if Gronk had been able to stop, and not only stop, but reverse field and make maybe a step to a step and a half back toward the ball, he would have been out in the neighborhood is generous, you know, is a generous thing to say, but he would have been within probably 3 to 8 feet, somewhere in that 5 foot range, of being able to at least possibly tip the ball or interfere with the defensive back so that he wouldn't catch it.
Yeah, I think it would be tough. It would have been tough for Gronkowski to get there and be the man right there at the football. But yeah, like you said, Kevin, at least an opportunity to stick his arm in there, tap it up in the air, hit the defensive back where it pops up into the air. And you know, we've seen Gronkowski do some ridiculous things with the football, make a hit potentially and grab it with one hand and fall in the end zone.
I mean, I'm not one of these wahoos that's just going to say, you know, they lost the game.
Is that a was that a wahoo or a yahoo?
Wahoo, yahoo. A honk, as Paul Perillo calls them.
Okay, honk.
I'm not one of these guys that's just going to sit here and make the excuse that the referees cost them the game. That's not what I'm saying. Even if the call gets made and the ball's on the one, it's no guarantee they score on that Panthers defense. They had already proven they couldn't get a yard on 3rd and 1 earlier in the game.
What play? What kind of play?
I think they would have thrown.
You would think they would have thrown.
I'm 99
from the 1 yard line.
Sure, they would have thrown. But let's just play devil's advocate too. Say they put the ball on the 13. That's definitely not a layup. You know,
right.
If they had called illegal contact or hold. So I'm not saying that, you know, the call cost the Patriots the game. That's not accurate. The Patriots cost the Patriots the game for the most part. But what really irritates most of the fans is that the opportunity, the best opportunity for them to win the game, they were denied of. And that's where it's hard to get past as a fan and as somebody who works for the team. And that's to sit here and listen to all these phone calls and emails, you know, come in all week. And it's just like you want to put your head through this glass that's between us because it's just so frustrating. But yeah, so I think that, you know, for those of the, you know, the diehard Pats fans that say, you know, the refs cost us, the Jets came and they cost us this game too, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's accurate. But I think it's there's definitely an injustice when a team clearly makes a play or gets in position to have a chance, a legitimate chance to score from, you know, inside the 15-yard line, whether it's at the 13 or the 1. And the Patriots already this year, Scott, proved they can win with pretty much no time on the clock from about that area when Kembrell Tompkins caught that pass for the Saints against the Saints. I think to rob them of that play and to rob football fans who are probably – you know, completely neutral across the country and across the world of getting to see that play, and probably there's no arguing the best Monday Night Football game of the year so far. I think
that's not saying much. No, but it's one of the best games of the year in general.
Yeah, in primetime games, you can probably include Sunday and Thursday.
And it was less than 3 hours.
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was a great game all around, and I think that it's not only a shame for the New England fans, but also just for the football fans in general, who invested 3 hours of their time in there and wanted to see a great game. They saw a great game, but it's a shame that, you know, this is what we're talking about still here on Wednesday, and we're not talking about, you know, the game in general.
But that Jets call, the whatever,
I was down there.
What's the official? I mean, what was the official call of the field goal penalty?
It was that he pushed. He aided his teammate in trying to block.
Okay.
He pushed him in the line.
I'm guessing you have much more of a problem with that one, though, than
yes.
what happened on Monday, because
yes.
that call was still, as far as I know, the only one that's been called.
Yep, it's a new rule.
And it was that week it was a point of emphasis.
Yes, it was a new rule, and I have been fortunate enough every year when the officials come during training camp and they give a symposium up in the Red Level press box here, I sit through it, I watch the video just as these PFW guys do. I was aware of the rule. I knew exactly what it was. I was down there in the stadium. I traveled with the team for that trip. I knew exactly what was coming, and I knew that where the flag was thrown in that vicinity, I knew exactly what it was. I hated it from the second I saw it come out. To make a call like that at that juncture, I looked up actually on the bus, Scott, on the bus to the airport to come home. I looked up, there had been over 400 field goals kicked in the league up to that point this year and had not been called once. 400.
Right.
You know,
and I think the more annoying thing was that it was that week. This is a point of interest. Watch out for this.
So let me be consistent, Scott. Say no flag comes out on Monday night, right? Say Gronk gets mugged and there's no flag that comes out. I might have been disappointed by the lack of a call, but I couldn't. In that situation, I think that it's pretty common that when you're in a Hail Mary situation, and people may not want to call from the 18-yard line a Hail Mary, but it's a low percentage play to score a touchdown on one play from the 18-yard line.
Yeah, with the defense.
It's a low percentage play.
The defense backing up to the goal line.
They just have one area to defend, and I think that for all intents and purposes, it may not have been a Hail Mary, but it was close to that type of odds of you scoring. With that said, you see the muggings constantly going on these Hail Mary passes. If Gronk did not receive any type of penalty flag on that play, while I might have been disappointed, I really wouldn't have argued with it. My argument is, if you actually go through and definitively get a look at it, and you immediately, instinctually throw that flag, there was no hesitation at all. It came out right away. It wasn't kind of dropped or fluffed. It was thrown right at his feet very decisively by the back judge. And to have, basically the only person, Scott, that can overrule another official, whether it be a side judge, back judge, umpire, whoever it is the white hat, the referee. In this case, it was Cleet Blakeman.
So great name, by the way.
To have him come in and just basically in that quick amount of time overrule his back judge. Now, maybe he did ask his side judge, or maybe he did ask his umpire for an opinion as well. But you got to admit, Scott, we listened to the radio call here at the open of the show. It was not a quick conference. When they huddled up, it was very, okay, we're going to pick this up and run off the field. By the time the flag was physically thrown to the time that Brady was going after Cleet Blakeman in the tunnel, couldn't have been more than, 30 seconds, 40 seconds?
Yeah.
It was quick.
Yeah.
So there was not like a minute-long deliberation over who saw what and trying to make
sure. So you're saying that the fact that it was so quick,
yes,
that kind of how they didn't even talk about it.
The fact that you go from a decisive decision made from a back judge who is only looking at Gronk, right? He's clearly looking. His assignment on that play, when you get into the mechanics of an official, his assignment on that play is that back line, Scott, that back of the end zone. He's looking right at it the whole time, and he makes a decision in a split second that's very decisive, it's very final, throws that flag down with confidence, and all of a sudden, within 30 seconds, you have that flag picked up, the penalty wiped out, no explanation given, and he just says the game's over and runs off the field. That, to me, is my problem. It's not necessarily, you could call me a hypocrite if, I said, if I whined about the Jets call, right? And I said, you can't throw that there, you can't decide a game with a penalty, right? And if Gronk never received the flag on that play and I complained about it, you could call me a hypocrite. But I don't think I would have been disappointed, but I would have known, I can't cry about this because I strongly believe in the, like John Rook said, I strongly believe in the officials not, meddling in the end of the game. But once you throw the flag and the guy who has the best look at it, Scott, no question about it. Cleet Blakeman, where the referee stands? About 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Ball's on the 18. He's at about the 25 to 30 yard line. He's arguably 35 yards away from that contact. 35 yards. And for him to step in and overrule that official from, with that official that's literally 5 feet away from Gronk as opposed to 35 yards, that to me is inexcusable. And it's left me wanting not only an answer, but an apology from the league. That's how bad I feel about it. That's how strongly I feel about it.
Yeah, when you put it that way, with how far away he was, and he's the man asked.
How many times, you're a basketball guy just like me. That's where we met back at UMass playing basketball.
I think I was tearing you up.
You were probably crossing me up, you know. But, you know, John Rook, too, another basketball guy.
Right.
You know, how often do we, you know, we're either engineering a game or calling a game in John's case or your case, and, you know, whether it's Maryland or PC or whoever your team is, and at the end of the game, you sort of see the coach. You'll see coaches when fouls get called at the end of a game, especially in the last minute. And, you know, I'm literally, when I do my job at a basketball game, I'm literally on the floor, like right next to the bench. And I can't even tell you how many times I'll hear Ed Cooley or whoever's in front of me, whatever coach, go up to an official and say, "How can you see that?
Oh yeah,
you know,
oh,
that's not your call.
That's the guy, every game.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, every game.
How
yep.
can you see that?
And then, I saw and it last night. The D3 level here.
On the flip
here.
Side, you might see a coach go to an official, right, an off official, and say, "Hey, like, how the heck can you guys make that call?" And he'll go, "That's not my call. It was his call." You know. So there's that constant, like, kind of bickering and complaining between coaches and players and the official trying to pass the buck. Well, whose call is it, right?
Right.
In this case, it's clearly the back judge's call. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that's when he is training and going through looking at tape and, you know, passing the exams in the test that you need to become an NFL official. That's what you're looking at. You know, when you're doing high school games, it's the same thing. When you're doing college games, it's the same thing. Like, these guys get, you know, basically for all intents and purposes called up based on their performance. They get graded out after every game. I don't see how you can take the judgment away from a guy that's at this level, right in front of the play with a clear look at it, and just basically take his opinion and his judgment of the call completely out of the equation. I don't get how you can do that.
To me, it sounds like you just nailed it. You just,
that's all I got.
You just put it all, every single thought you had in your head just all came together perfectly. And that was a very strong argument.
And like I said, I think it goes in all sports. You see it in basketball all the time. You see it in hockey. You know, I mean, a little bit less in baseball, but these live ball / live puck games where there, you know, are multiple officials moving around constantly, and they're not just at a base like in a baseball game, and have to call basically out or safe, fair, or foul. You know, there's interpretations, yes, but these guys are put in specific positions, Scott, on the field, on the ice, or on the court. And they're put in those positions by, you know, their supervisors, and it's how they're trained to be in those spots, because that's the best vantage point, that's the best viewpoint to make a call. And if he was out of position scrambling and, you know, missed it, or that's one, but he's literally standing there, hands on knees, staring it down the whole way. And it's like, how can you go away from an opinion of a guy like that? You know, it's just beyond me. And then be overruled by somebody who's just so far removed from the play and what he's supposed to be looking at, right? Cleet Blakeman, 10 yards in the backfield, is holding along the offensive line, and basically whether the quarterback is beyond the line of scrimmage when he throws the ball, and any illegal / late hit on the quarterback or illegal hands to the face along the line, anything like that, sure, Scott, that's his call to step in and overrule. But a play that's 20 yards downfield past the line of scrimmage when he's already 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage, for him to step in and overrule that, to me, is just, it's just bull you know what.
Well put. By the way, they're saying Patriots cornerback Aqib Talib day-to-day with the hip injury that tightened up on Monday night. So people were asking, is it the hip still? Was it the hip? Was it something else? Was it a hamstring? Was it a groin? So it's still the hip for Talib. That's a bit of a concern. Certainly going into the game against Denver on Sunday when you already have Alphonso Dennard, who is apparently looks like he's going to be out. Steve Gregory, who they had a picture of his thumb surgically repaired earlier today. It's a, ugh, I don't like looking at that. So, things, Kyle Arrington is, I believe it's a groin or a hamstring with him as well. So obviously going into the Denver game, you don't want your secondary to be banged up like it is, but that's kind of been the story of the defense so far this season. Webradio@patriots.com. If you want to email in your nitpicks, if you still have them from Monday night's game, or if you want to look forward to the game with the Broncos Sunday night right here at Gillette Stadium. Of course, you can also call in on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500. Have another email, a good subject, well, subject line, move on, comes from Joel of Merrimack, New Hampshire. Says, I don't agree with people who assert that the pass was clearly uncatchable. Gronk has shown on multiple occasions that he's an athletic playmaker. Having said that, it's done, move on. Ridley's fumble and the defense's inability to stop the Panthers on that last drive were the keys to the loss. Ridley now scares me like Falk did early in his career. The first couple of years Falk played, I cringed every time he carried the ball. I think Vereen and Blunt are going to have to take more of the running load, but our defense is the key. We were not going very deep in the playoffs, ranked 29th at stopping teams on third down. People say they are tough on the run, and that is true, but we live in a pass-happy NFL, and this Sunday, that is going to be made painfully aware to all. Have to agree with most of this email from Joel, and 29th in the league at stopping third down is, it's amazing that you're a team that's 7-3 when you have that sort of number. Panthers, again, converted 8 of 11 third downs on Monday night, so plenty of extra opportunities for Carolina to score, and they took advantage of that last drive with Cam Newton, able to take the lead, obviously. And you're going against the Broncos on Sunday with a defense that's banged up, a pass-happy league. Obviously, the Broncos are pass-happy. You have Peyton Manning, you're going to be pass-happy. Doesn't matter what, you know, what team you are, whoever he's the quarterback of, they're going to be throwing the ball a lot. So certainly concerns heading into the game Sunday. And Joel saying time to move on. And I think as we head into tomorrow and obviously onto Friday, things will really shift towards the Broncos in Bill Belichick, in the classic Bill Belichick way. And you didn't expect anything less when asked about the call on Monday, if he had received any word or official statement that we've moved on. We moved on to Denver. So, I mean, reporters have to ask those questions, those ones to Bill, but you pretty much know what the response is going to be. Ace Ticket Hotline, 855-PATS-500. Let's grab a call right before we take a break. Sean in New Jersey, and he wants to talk about the bad call or the bad non-call. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How you been?
Great, thanks. No, I didn't really want to talk about that call too much. It's been beaten to death.
Just a little bit.
Like everybody else, but you know, I had a problem with even more than that call was the play calling on the last drive to the Patriots, next to last drive when they had the third and one. That really bothered me, that third and one call, because I think we've seen it time and time again this year. Third and one, they pass, and they don't make it.
Right.
That bothered me for two reasons, because not only was the running game working at that moment, I felt like they should have given it another try on the ground there to get that first down. But you threw the ball, you had an incomplete pass, you stopped the clock, you kicked the field goal. Now you gave them, as soon as that happened, they had 6 minutes left, they said, watch them, they're going to take 5 minutes to go down the field, get the touchdown, and we're going to have a minute left to try to get a touchdown. That's exactly what happened.
In going back to that third down and one where Brady a pass incomplete short left to Aaron Dobson, that play was from the 8-yard line. The two prior plays to that incomplete pass, LeGarrette Blount right guard to the Carolina 14 for 3 yards. Next play, LeGarrette Blount up the middle to the Carolina 8 for 6 yards. So that third and one play was set up by back-to-back runs by LeGarrette Blount, 4.5 yards per carry, 3 yards and 6 yards. He got you the first 9. I mean, I guess I understand the idea if you just put Blount in the backfield again, Carolina's go, oh, I wonder what they're going to do. Because every time he's out there, it's usually to run. But that being said, you probably in that instance, you could look at it maybe having two chances if you really want to go for it on fourth down potentially, which they didn't do, obviously, with Gostkowski kicking the 26-yard field goal. But I would have taken a bet on Blount being able to get 1 yard up the middle again.
Right.
Or how many times have we seen Tom just lower his shoulder and find a way to get a yard on a quick snap?
Yeah, exactly. It was working, and even if it didn't, you weren't any worse off than you were. You still kicked the field goal.
Yeah, and that entire drive was pretty much Blount running the ball. There were two passes that were complete from Brady, and then the incomplete. The rest was Blount running. So,
yeah. And the other problem I've had is it seems like last couple of years, even this year with the defense being better, we see that the pass defense is kind of starting to go a little bit downhill in the last few games now with all the injuries. But in the last few years, it seems like it's been the same old story. If they leave 6 minutes, 5 minutes on the clock, and they give the ball back to the other team. If they're not up a touchdown, that team goes down and scores a touchdown, and then we're down 4 points with a minute or 30 seconds left to try to come back. We've seen it happen time and time again the last two or three years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation, you know, the third and one, you always hope that that's something that you can convert and head in for a touchdown. That, I mean, it was a 26-yard field goal. That's one of the, I mean, you can't, it doesn't get, usually doesn't get much shorter. Obviously, it can, but you get the point. So, you know, that's, unfortunately, those are games that you're going to lose if you give up all the third down conversions and then you cannot convert them yourselves. You have to settle for a field goal, and that's what happens. And that Carolina offense is, we've seen, is very good with Cam Newton with running it. Sean, just quickly looking forward to Sunday, if you can, maybe 30 seconds or less, are you worried about the Broncos game? Do you have any, you know, any good feeling about that game?
I'm just glad we're playing at home, but I don't see us winning it. We're going to be on a two-game losing streak.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Sean.
All right, no problem.
855-PATS-500, the Ace Ticket Hotline, and we have emails piling up, webradio@patriots.com, so we'll get to those in a couple of minutes as well. Patriots Playbook, Scott Sudikoff filling in for John Rook. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll have those emails that are piling up, and you can send some more in, again, at webradio@patriots.com, and the phone line, again, 855-PATS-500. More coming up, Patriots Playbook.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epocher. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back in the Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium. This is Patriots Playbook. Scott Sudikoff with you, filling in for John Rook here this afternoon. Call the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or toll-free 855-PATS-500. Also email us at webradio@patriots.com. And in a moment, we'll get back to your emails and your phone calls. But just a few moments ago, a few minutes ago, Tom Brady was up at the podium here at Gillette Stadium. And 2 days removed from what happened on Monday, let's hear a bit with what Tom had to say.
If it plays, of course.
Oh, it will.
Did yet? A few times.
Any final thoughts before moving on to Denver?
No final thoughts. My mom thought it was a penalty.
Talk to the league.
No more thoughts. We're moving on to Denver.
And that's kind of been
short and sweet.
Yep, and that's what Bill Belichick has said a couple of times. On to Denver. On to Denver. Not that you expect anything different from Belichick or the Patriots in general. They're going to be focused, and they have to be focused on Denver. This is 9-1 Broncos that throw the ball all over the place and just beat the lone undefeated team in the NFL.
It's that Tom Curran trying to get a trying to get a rise out of TB12 there.
Trying to get something out of him, and that's a nice funny helps break the ice a bit, saying that his mother thought it was a bad call. Now we'll have to find out some other mothers, Luke Kuechly's mom, or I forget who.
Everyone sucks but me.
Exactly. That is true. Webradio at patriots.com. Let's read an email before we go back to the phone calls. Terry on an email. One thing everyone is missing. The defensive back caught the ball with his arms into his chest or 4 feet off the ground about 3 yards deep in the end zone. 4 feet off the ground, 3 yards deep in the end zone. So he was sort of falling to the ground. Gronk was about 3 yards from the end line. The pass came from the 20-yard line. Estimating a 7-foot-high release point from Brady's hand. This is getting a little too scientific. The ball fell 3 feet and 23 yards. Given the trajectory, you have to say it would not have fallen the remaining 4 feet to the turf in 4 yards to where Gronkowski was. So I think that means he's saying the pass wouldn't have gotten to Gronk where he was. But I guess the main...
Yeah, and Brady said as much. I mean, he blamed himself a little bit for the bad throw, and he said a better throw, a higher throw might, you know, get them to not pick up that flag because it would have been a more catchable ball, you know, if he can elevate that over the front defensive back there.
Right, if it wasn't, maybe, I guess the thought, if it wasn't so cleanly intercepted, it was like, if you just watch that play and you didn't see Gronkowski being held, you go, where the hell was that?
Yeah. I mean, right. The other thing, though, in Tom's defense, and I'm not exactly a Brady apologist. I was pro Bledsoe back in the day, by the way, Sudi. I mean, I got Bledsoe everything still to this day. But, you know, when you're Tom in that position and you know you have one play, you got one shot, the one thing you can't do that you see a lot at the collegiate level, and it frustrates me, is a quarterback in that position who just throws it out of bounds or throws it out the back of the end zone and never gives anybody a chance. So what he's doing is he's making sure if I'm going to miss on this, it's going to be short rather than long to at least give somebody a chance to make a play on the ball. Because what good is it if you throw it out through the goalposts? I mean, that's your last shot. Even if it gets picked, so what? It's going to be the end of the game anyway.
You never know. It can get picked. The defensive back can totally forget the situation, running, fumble.
It's unfortunate for the Patriots that they didn't have some idiot like James Ahedebo to hit the ball up about 20 feet in the air for them to catch it.
Oh, that was what? The Georgia Auburn game on Saturday.
I'm talking Ravens Bengals.
Okay, right.
But AJ Green caught that ball. The Georgia players running
knocked
into one
the ball yeah. down.
Yeah.
Oh,
James Ahedebo apparently didn't learn that at the great institution that is UMass, by the way.
What's their record right now? 1-9.
They're about 1-100 in the past couple of years. It feels like
it takes
another crushing defeat to the Akron Zips.
14-13.
They hung in there for a while
in the game, so it's making progress. It'll take a while, I think, but we'll see.
I'm not holding my breath.
855-PATS-500, the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's head there right now. We'll talk to Eldridge, who is in North Carolina. What's going on?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing?
Doing well.
I'm not. I was at the game, and I'm totally.
Eldridge, did you go to the game on Monday night?
Yes, I was.
Did you go out and get absolutely? Did you get hammered after the game? Were you depressed?
Oh yeah, I got hammered. Matter of fact, I'm sitting in a section with a bunch of Panthers fans. A few.
Oh man.
In my section, a lot of them were Panthers. So I heard it, right?
Oh yeah.
You expect it. Eldridge, did you see Eric or Fred while you were down there?
No, I talked to him, though. I tried to set up some, but never got a chance to.
Gotcha.
Never got a chance to.
Gotcha.
But that throw was a bad throw by Brady. But the part that gets me the most is our secondary. I mean, I don't know what Bill keep looking at because he bring back the same guys. But Arrington, every time I turn around, we're losing the game. You know, because if you can't tackle Quinn, number 19, something wrong. 5 yards, and you let him run 15 for a touchdown, that's something else. You know, you can't tackle. The end's coming in too wide. The tackle's not getting to push up the middle. And Cam just running. A couple of plays, I saw them. Cam will run to the left, or Cam will take it to the right. And sure enough, we ain't got nobody fast enough to catch him, unless they got angles.
Yeah.
But other than that, I just hate the secondary. I hate them.
Just flat out hate them.
I'm talking about courage-wise. No, individual-wise, I understand, but if I'm paying you $16 million, you better pay like a $30 million quarterback to me. If you don't, I want my $15 million back and some change. You got to pay like, you know what I mean? I mean, you just got to play. And all them bad techniques and arm tackling, man, them grown men, there ain't no little kids no more.
Straight cash, homie.
To be fair, how many guys actually tackled Ted Ginn, though, in that situation? Well, it was against Kyle Arrington, right?
But Eldridge is right. Arrington's playing, and I think what you're trying to say, Eldridge, is it was 2nd and 15 on that play, and he's playing 5-8 yards off trying to come up and tackle him for a 7-yard gain, so it's still 3rd and 8,
And
for him to – yeah, exactly. For him to give him that cushion on purpose – and with the strategy of letting him catch it and coming up and keeping him in bounds and making the tackle and to just completely whiff. I don't even think he touched him, Eldridge. I don't even think he touched Ted Ginn.
I don't think it did. I think it reached for air because I'm sitting there looking at it and I'm like, oh boy.
So for him to play that technique and be so bad that he couldn't even come up and get a piece of him to slow him down, I'm with Eldridge on this one. That's awful.
Because Ginn is really a return guy. He's not a real receiver. He can catch though, but he's mainly a return guy. And you let a return man.
Yeah, former highly celebrated pick of the first round pick of the Miami Dolphins, I believe. I think he was like the number 8 pick in that draft.
Yeah,
right. And you don't play against them for years. You know what I mean? You don't play against them for years. But you still can't tackle? Now, Cam, I figure Cam give anybody a hard time to tackle. So I wasn't really, you know, I liked it. Chandler Jones and Dinkovich for a couple of sacks they did, you know, forcing them in. But like I said, them people who tackles, they were getting whooped all night. They were getting whipped.
I got a question for you, Eldridge. After a game like that, what's the best? Where's the best place to drown your sorrows in Charlotte?
Man, I had to go to work the next day. If I didn't, I was going to a pub somewhere and get drunk.
I've never been to Charlotte. I've been to the Raleigh-Durham area. Never made it that far south.
Yeah, but Charlotte got a lot of good restaurants. You know, Carrabba's. Yeah,
they went to Bikinis, Eldridge. Eric and Fred, I think they went to like that restaurant chain called Bikinis for a Patriots party the night before.
Oh, Bikinis.
Yeah, apparently the thing is like all the waitresses like, you know, dress up in bikinis, but for this they were all wearing Pats jerseys, I guess.
Ooh.
There might have been, but there's a lot more Pats fans in Charlotte than I thought there was.
So you got to make friends. You got to make friends with them, Eldridge. Unite. Get them to tune into the show.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that.
All right,
y'all
buddy.
Have a good one.
All right, thanks for the call, Eldridge. Bye-bye. Let's stay on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 855-PATS-500. And
by the way, I've been alerted that Ted Ginn was the number 9 pick in the draft that year by my good friend who's a Dolphins fan.
Oh, and is that Mr. Travis?
That's
our
Mr. Tebow.
Good friend Travis.
and he alerts me that Patrick Willis and Darrell Revis were both on the board when the Dolphins made that selection.
Ooh,
so, tough sled in there.
Just
wanted to correct myself.
They're the Dolphins.
I was just correcting myself because I said he was the number 8 pick, so I wanted to get that clear.
Let's go down to Valdosta, Georgia. Let's talk to Big Al. What's going on, Big Al?
Good afternoon there, boys. How you doing?
Good. Good afternoon.
Yeah, we needed the Georgia Bulldogs defensive backs coach to take over for the Panthers on that last drive. I guess he was busy. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just happened to put my glance on that game when that last play happened.
I
couldn't believe it.
I forget, Al. Are you a Georgia Bulldogs fan?
Well, you know, you try to go native. I mean,
yeah, no, exactly. I wouldn't blame you if you were
growing up in. I am. I mean, I casual.
But I was watching that game, and I thought of you. I got to admit, and I thought of Jackie Britton, who's our great host of Patriots Today, who's a diehard Georgia Bulldogs fan.
Well, I can't claim to be that. I mean, we've got, I work at Valdosta State, and we've got our own football team in Division II, so I guess I kind of have to, my loyalties have to be there. But, yeah, UGA is the flagship school, and you want to see them do well. A lot of people that are Valdosta State fans are also Bulldog fans, so it kind of goes. Or Florida Gators, we're not too far from Gainesville.
All right.
Either only a couple hours. So it's kind of a split, area here. But, I mean, that was just, I don't think if you're a college program, you never want to create that repeatable video, that makes you look bad. For years we had, Georgia had that Buck Ballou to Lindsey Scott thing that got ran 3 million times, for 1980. But, maybe this kind of balances that out. now you've got one that goes against you that's going to get replayed 3 million times or whatever. So, that was pretty bad. But I guess, like I say, he was not available to coach the Panthers defensive secondary, this guy, whoever, the defensive back, George. But I thought it was a good call. I thought it was good. I thought it was, poorly explained. I think, they sort of give you the Emily Latella, never mind. They give you that, and that's not good. They should at least, everybody makes fun of this Hockley because he supposedly is too wordy, and he'll take 30 to 45 seconds to tell you the ball was incomplete.
But at least he describes it to you.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Exactly. He explains it to you at the very least.
He explains it to you. I mean, I want to know, like the man said, I want to know what the hell's going on out there, okay? And at least he, Ed Hockley, maybe, again, he can be lampooned, but he at least makes the attempt to tell you what the hell's going on.
What the hell are you guys up to now?
There you go. He basically, Cleet Blakeman just said, well, the game's over. See ya. So, I mean, there are other officials that will explain to you what's going on. he simply chose not to or didn't feel like he had to. And I think that led to a part of a controversy that it wasn't explained well. Plus, I think the fact that the people are not able to separate the mugging that Gronkowski took from the fact that the ball was uncatchable. I think it was uncatchable. And so it's like you see how badly Gronkowski was mugged, and you want to believe that the ball was catchable. You know, oh, come on, look at how bad he was roughed up. That ball had to be catchable. No. You know, it's two separate issues. It doesn't matter how bad Gronkowski was roughed up. If the ball was uncatchable, then it was uncatchable, and there's no interference. So if that's the basis of the call, then I understand the call. I frankly have a lot more problems with the Jets call.
Oh, yeah.
I have no clue as to what that kid supposedly did to violate the rule. I mean, I understand the rule, and I support the rule. I understand what the rule is trying to accomplish. But what exactly did he physically do to violate that rule? I haven't seen it yet. If somebody can explain that to me, I'd be thrilled. But I don't see what he did. He just put his hand on somebody, and that was supposedly some kind of a violation. What, you know, I don't understand. If that's the case, then they got to call that thing a lot. You know, they got to call that pretty much every week or something, because that didn't seem like he did a whole lot to violate that rule, as good as that rule might be.
Well, we have a, if it's past 5 yards, you can't touch a guy, so that's illegal contact. So, in essence, with that penalty or the play that wasn't called with Kuechly, at the very least, you could have called an illegal contact, right? Though, I mean, maybe not pass interference,
no.
But
I don't think so.
You don't?
I don't think so. Forgive me, but as soon as the ball is in the air, illegal contact is off the table. It has to be pass interference.
That is true.
I didn't see contact before the ball was in the air. I didn't see that.
No,
maybe
but even if the ball's in the air, Al, you still can't be touching him. That's the rule, like it or not.
If the ball's in the air, you can't be touching him, and if you do, that's not illegal contact.
It's PI.
That's pass interference.
Exactly. I agree with you, but you're trying to say, are you telling me, just answer this question for me, Al. Are you telling me that Luke Kuechly didn't touch Gronk?
No, he mugged him.
Okay.
But he mugged him after the ball was in the air.
Okay, so that would be PI, exactly. I agree with you. I agree 100%.
At that point, the only call you can make, you can't call defensive holding or contact.
I agree.
You have to call pass interference.
I agree.
And, yeah, I wish that there would have been pass interference, but the ball was not catchable.
Okay, so your argument is more along the lines of that, in your opinion, you deem that Gronk had no chance to make a play on the ball.
I agree.
Okay.
I have two opinions. Immediately, admittedly, they're both opinions, and they can easily be disagreed with.
No, and you
just
have
like
every
I think
right to
Tim
share.
Tim Tebow is really good inside the 10-yard line. It's just an opinion.
Yeah.
You can disagree with. But in my opinion, there was no contact until the ball was in the air.
Okay.
And secondarily, in my opinion, the ball was uncatchable. So, to me, if you know, you can disagree with those opinions, but that appears to be what the officials called.
I agree with you that there was no contact till the ball was in the air. I agree 100% on that.
All right.
And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Gronk definitely would have caught the ball, because I don't believe that's the case. But I do think he would have. Given who he is and what he's shown me so far as a player, I think he could have at the very least made some type of play on the ball. I don't know what that would exactly be, Al. I don't know if he would have been able to deflect it, or if he would have been able to, you know, do anything with it, but I think he would have been able to make some type of play on the ball, and that's just my opinion.
Well, that's a completely reasonable opinion. We just happen to disagree.
Yeah,
I
no,
don't think
I'm with you on
that ball.
That actually brings up an interesting thing, at least in my eyes. So, Kevin, you're saying, so Rob Gronkowski, great player, we all know, can make fantastic catches. Are we saying if that's someone else, just say that was me. Just for the sake of argument,
you would have had no shot.
And I'm being mugged.
Kendrell Tompkins.
But I'm being
made that play.
Al might have had a shot, but you would have had no shot.
Should
Scott.
It be? What I'm saying is, we're saying it should be a penalty against Gronkowski because he could have made the play because of how talented he is. Now put somebody a lot. Just say that was Matthew Slater.
Yeah.
Great special teams guy. Not your number one receiver.
Yeah.
Should he get the penalty too, though? You know what I mean?
I mean, that's a good.
Should the officials make a call based on who, like the NBA, where they call it on there, superstars.
If you go there, you're almost creating an NBA star system.
Yeah, where, I agree with you.
Where Michael Jordan gets breathed on and it's a foul. If Joe Harmuda gets mugged, it's not a foul.
No, I agree with you.
So yeah, I don't want to create an, and that's good, I guess, for the NBA. But,
I just want to bring up one more.
But
thing.
I don't want to create a star system in the NFL.
I just want to bring up one more thing.
It doesn't make any difference if that's Rob Gronkowski or Rob Harmuda. Either the ball is catchable or it's not.
I
just don't think it was.
One more tidbit, Al, just because.
All right.
I'm a lot younger, and I'll admit, Al, I don't have as much, history in and around the game as you do. I'm being complimentary of you, so take
it
for what it's worth.
I appreciate it doesn't make me any smarter.
When you look, and I do not have
a lot of football,
but I do not have the rule book in my pocket or up on my screen or anything. But this is off the top of my head, something that got brought up on Felger and Maz yesterday that I was listening to. Tony and Michael were talking about something along the lines of what it said in the rule book over, like, you know, the definition of uncatchable in the rule book. And according to them and other people that I've heard on the radio, and like I said, I haven't looked this up myself, but they were saying that uncatchable can only be called on passes that are, like, you know, that land in the first row or hit a cheerleader, that are out of bounds, you know, over someone's head out the back of the end zone on the sideline.
Right.
To them, that was the definition or what was deemed the spirit, you know, of the rule in terms of uncatchable. If the ball lands in the middle of the end zone and it's definitely not over, you know, Gronk's head and it's not out of bounds, does that kind of go against what you would deem as uncatchable in your definition?
Well, again, you make a good point. And I guess I'm a little bit more like Ming the Merciless when it comes to what's uncatchable. I think a lot more things are uncatchable than the National Football League seems to think, because I agree with you. They are so pro offense with all their calls now.
And I agree with
you. You can airmail a ball 20 yards over somebody's head and they'll still call interference.
I agree with
that. And claim that it was somehow, you know, if Wilt Chamberlain was on stilts, he could have caught it.
I agree.
You know, and so, you know, based upon that forgiving history, then you might conclude, like you have possibly, that the ball could have been caught. But I'd like to tighten the screws a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that ball was catchable. And I think that more balls should be called uncatchable.
And I think what you and I are agreeing on here, one thing we are agreeing on, is we'd like a little more consistency.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because you look at the PI earlier in that drive, Al, that was called on Dobson on the sideline there. There was no way in hell he's catching that ball.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know what? Here's the flip side on that, though.
Okay.
If they grab Dobson at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And the ball is lobbed out ahead to the spot where Brady thinks Dobson's going to be.
Yeah.
Then the official is more likely to think, well, he would have got to that spot if he hadn't been grabbed. So I'm going to call that ball catchable.
Okay.
I can sort of agree with that.
But there
are balls that get airmailed to the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
That still, there's interference called on those.
Yeah, to me.
I've seen those calls.
And to me, Al.
And so I think that you should call more balls uncatchable.
I agree with you. And to me, the ball to Dobson, Al, just to kind of finish my point on that, I felt that ball, and like so many other balls we see, each and every week with different quarterbacks from around the league, you'll see, and I'm just going to throw this out in general sense. You'll see the quarterback, Al, getting heat either from the side or up the middle, and he's looking for an outlet, and he's in the pocket now, Al. So he can't, he knows he has to fire it at least in the general direction of somebody because he's between the tackle boxes. So, you know, he can't just fling it into the third row. Because the two criteria are the ball needs to reach the line of scrimmage and he needs to be outside the tackle box.
Right. He wants to avoid the intentional
grounding. Exactly. So he's looking at, you know, the wide receiver who's, you know, either run the out route or run, you know, a little button hook that's standing along the sideline that's clearly blanketed and, you know, just trying to figure out how, you know, can I come back for the ball, that type of thing. And he chicken wing, and the quarterback will chicken wing the ball out of bounds. And it, I mean, it'll be either 8 yards short of him, Al, or it'll be, you know, in the third row, and you see PI called on it, you know, and Dobson,
he did,
by the letter of the law, Al, Dobson on that play did get interfered with. But when I looked at the replay a couple times, and since it was kind of a lesser talked about play, Al, you know, it didn't get a lot of hubbub that it might have
happened at the very end.
Exactly. Yeah. So I happened to go back, Alan, and I just sort of playing devil's advocate, kind of looked at like where the ball was in conjunction of where Dobson was at the time when Brady kind of threw it, and I was like, he has no shot to catch that ball inbounds, Al. He had no shot. And it was just I think that what we're getting at here is whether it's on the sideline or in the back of the end zone, wherever it may be, you know, you just want some consistency and an explanation as to what's called.
Well, there is a way, I think, to get more consistency, to get what you're looking for. And I don't know if the NFL will ever do it, but I think they ought to just do some version of the college rule where we just call interference and we make it a yardage penalty instead of a spot foul. Because these officials will deny it, and every official will deny it, but they're thinking to themselves, you know what? If we call pass interference on this play on Gronkowski, they're going to get a first and goal at the one.
Yeah.
And they're going to be 1 yard away.
Exactly. Exactly.
Winning the game, and we're going to be accused of throwing the game.
And it's going to be all this hubbub in the other direction. I agree with you 100%.
There's too many harsh consequences to this jockeying for position and elbowing, and it's a subjective call. The officials are always moving when they're calling pass interference, although that guy was stationary in the back of the end zone. But for a lot of times on these downfield throws, the officials are running to catch up to the play. You can't see anything when you're moving as well as you can when you're stationary. And it's just a tough call. You're setting these officials up to fail, basically. And so you ought to do like the college rule and just say, you know what, it's a 15-yard penalty. Or if it had happened, if they had called it on Gronkowski, I would have said half the distance to the goal. You know, we were at the 17 or 18, wherever it was. Mark it off half the distance to the goal, and then you say first, and you get your play from the 8-yard line or the 9 instead of the 1-yard line. Okay, and then maybe you make a different call. Who knows? But I think you do that, and then if you have everybody say, well, there might be the flagrant, I might be trying to prevent a touchdown, I'll just grab somebody and take the 15 yards rather than give up a touchdown. Then I think you do give the official judgment, and you say, well, if that's a flagrant pass interference to obviously prevent a touchdown, then we'll make it a spot foul and keep the rule the way it is, and we'll give you the ball on the spot. Like a flagrant call in the NBA. You know, we have a flagrant foul. There's a foul, and there's a flagrant foul. You could have pass interference, that'd be 15 yards, and you could have flagrant pass interference, where we're obviously undressing somebody to prevent a long touchdown. Then, you know, then you say, okay, spot foul. But otherwise, if we're just elbowing, or it's the arm bar thing, or it's the jockeying for position, or we're not sure, they're pushing off, they're just pushing each other, then I think, okay, make your call, do the best you can, but let's not have the consequences be a 55-yard false completion, you know, downfield. Let's just mark off 15 and go from there.
Yeah, I think that would be the best
way to help the officials out, because the officials are, to me, are being set up to fail under pass interference right now. And these guys are good. By the time they get to the NFL, they're good at faking these pass interference. You know, like it's kind of like the block charge call in the NBA. They're very good at acting that, you know.
Yeah.
And they play these officials like violins. And I think the defensive backs and receivers are kind of like the block charge call, you know, in football. And they're very good at playing these officials and faking stuff and looking like I'm being pushed and pushing but I'm not, and doing the arm bar thing and the thing. So, you know, just get the guy off the hook. He can't see the call to make it anyway.
Yeah.
Just make it a 15-yard, and then that way you're not ending the world based upon a pass interference call that.
All right, Al, you've definitely been making some great points. We've got to get Al his own show, I think, because he's a lot of great points. So thanks for the call, Al. We're up against it, as they like to say in the radio biz. We want to take one final break here in the Patriots Playbook. When we come back, a couple more phone calls, some more emails. Patriots Playbook continuing after these messages.
The word offseason doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Welcome back in the Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium. Scott Sudikoff here with you, filling in for John Rook this afternoon on Patriots playbook, as John is on a plane to the Virgin Islands with the Providence College Friars men's basketball team for a nice weekend tournament, three games down there. So he'll have a lot of time to soak in some sun and watch a lot of college basketball. Let's go right back to the Ace Ticket Hotline. And Andrew has been waiting for a long time. He's on the line from Buffalo. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hey, how's that doing?
Not too bad. Not too many complaints. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just really upset with the game. My
honest, I don't know. He's been missing a lot of tackles, long coverages. A lot of people say he was playing better earlier in the season. I sort of agree, but sort of not. I've seen him where he blew coverages and the receivers sort of dropped the ball in key situations, which kind of let him off the hook. In that Bills game, the Jets game, and some a few other games too. But I think he should get rid of that visor. I'm starting to wonder if he can even see the opposition. The fact that he couldn't lay a hand on Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn is not a great route runner, and he just completely missed him.
Well, and I think some of the problem was just we were talking about that a bit earlier is where Arrington was positioning against Ginn almost gave him too much space, and then you give Ginn space and you miss that tackle initially, you have no chance. And I think that's kind of what happened on that play on that last drive.
And the problem they said was I didn't know it was 25 yards. I was thinking more like 15 to 10. But if it was 25, I know Hightower's not the fastest, but someone got to make a play. Or Harmon, the rookie, I've seen him trailing. It's just completely ridiculous that no one was able to catch him for 25 yards.
Are you talking about the Cam Newton run?
No, it was
Ted Ginn. Ginn.
When he made
Kyle
Arrington miss,
right.
You saw Hightower in the background trailing, and you've seen the rookie, DeRon Harmon, getting there late.
Yeah, you're right. It was 25 yards.
Right. 25 yards, right?
Yes. So you think somebody would get there before he got to that end zone.
Right. Got to get there. If it was if it was that linebacker from the Panthers, he definitely would have got him. But, another thing, too, I completely disagree with, I think his name is Al, the last caller.
Big Al, yeah.
Saying that, I mean, it's clearly a pass interference. If you listen to Trent, they're for Dilfer from the ESPN Sports.
Mm-hmm.
He said that I agree with him, too, because he said that when the foul occurred, it occurred where the ball was thrown. You can clearly see where the ball was thrown. Gronkowski was trying to slow down. The ball was being thrown, and he's already pushing him away from where the ball is going to. So that is clearly a pass interference, and I think they just missed that.
Yeah, that's actually that's a good point. You're right, because where it ended up, you see the pictures, you see Keekly holding him, but it's the contact did start earlier, so Gronkowski, in essence, may have been turning to go back to the football right at that point before he started to get pushed back. So that's obviously an excellent point there, Andrew.
Right. One more point.
Yep.
Have any of y'all really seen Gronk make those, in that type of coverage, what I'm saying is if it would have been better had Tom Brady threw a back shoulder pass. Similar to the one when Ben Watson had on the Bills a couple of years ago. I think it was the game-winning touchdown. It's like one of those passes where it's good coverage, but you throw it to the back shoulder so Rob Gronkowski can change direction and make the catch. Have y'all really seen one of those lately? I mean, from him, because I haven't. Not those physical catches, back shoulder on the defender.
Yeah, nothing really comes to mind. You're right. I mean,
the one that comes to mind for me is he had Dobson on a nice back shoulder.
Okay.
In the Pittsburgh game, I believe, Andrew. It was probably about a 15 to 20 yard pass, similar to the kind of range that they were in here on Monday night against Carolina. And Dobson literally just ran just a go route down the sideline into the corner, the left pylon of the end zone. And he hit him on a back shoulder, and he barely got his butt in bounds. It happened right in front of me, but that's the only one I can remember all year. Earlier in the season, if you remember, Andrew, they were trying to do it with Tompkins a lot, and they just were never on the same page.
Right, it didn't work out well. And the thing with Gronk, I felt like we didn't get him more involved because of the lack of route running they made him do. I think they made him do a lot of seam routes, which that's Brady's and Gronkowski's bread and butter.
Bread and butter, exactly. And that's what, Andrew, that's exactly what the fourth in 10 play was to start that drive, the 23-yard pass to Gronk that got him going.
Yeah, that got him going. I think the reason why we got it is because you saw, I don't know who it was, but someone was guarding him all night. It wasn't that linebacker. It was someone else. And then finally on fourth and 10, they put Lukicki on him. I think that's his name.
Yeah, that's right.
Beat him on that play, but it seemed like all through that game, that's all they had Gronk either doing that or blocking. And I don't think that's the way you want to get him involved. You want to do some other things to get him going. You don't want to just do the same route. all night. It's just frustrating.
All right, Andrew. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
In that ball to Gronk on 4th and 10 on the 23-yard gain to start that drive, Sudi, basically the same pattern was run by Gronk in the end zone with Keekly on him, and it would have taken a similar type throw to give him a more realistic chance, I would say, at catching that ball. Mm-hmm. But like I said, you know, and I've pounded the drum all day on it, I can't really blame 12 for throwing it short when in his mind he's smart enough to know one thing I cannot do here is throw it 10 yards out the back of the end
zone. Right, he throws it long, it might legitimately be uncatchable.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I know that was in his head.
A couple of emails also saying Big Al got it wrong. Actually, they're both from Joel. He says, the ball was still in the field of play, hence the ball could have been caught by Gronk. It was not out of bounds. The refs got it right, but had a change of heart for whatever reason. Now, I don't think it's a steadfast rule that it's in the field of play. It's catchable. I mean, Brady could have thrown it 20 yards shorter into no man's land. That wouldn't have been catchable by Gronkowski, but obviously the point is made there. And then Joel says there should not be any changes on pass interference because then you put more power in the ref's hands. So then that's the argument of, well, if it's a clear, flagrant pass interference, then it's a spot foul, as opposed to, well, it's not that we're not sure, but it's a good old fashioned, he grabbed him, let's make it 15 yards. Honestly, I tend to go with, I much rather have the 15-yard penalty, and I guess if you can work in that,
like, it's less crippling.
But I think the flagrant part of it, so I think it should be a 15-yard penalty no matter what, except if it's in the end zone and it's clear, like he tackles him. So I guess that gives you... So that call on Monday, if they made it, that would have been up to interpretation. Was that on purpose? So if so, it's at the 1 yard line. If not, it's half the distance or 15 yards. If it happens, if there's a pass interference at the 50 yard line and the pass comes from the 20, yeah, I know that's 30 yards. It should be a 15 yard penalty. I think there's just too many things everything's been alluded to are going towards the offense's way. All right, you're going to get the penalty. You're going to get a first down. Instead of 30 yards, you're going to get 15. And that's how it is. That's how it is in college, and not usually don't see the NFL adopt college rules. So that's one reason why you probably won't see it happen like that. It usually will go the other way. We got one more phone call up on the board to end the day here on Patriots Playbook, or at least one more phone call up on the board right now. We'll talk to Tyrone in Delaware. What's up, Tyrone?
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. I'll be really quick. I know a lot of people been calling in, blaming the referees or whatever for that pass. And I know in hindsight, I think you guys were just saying that Brady tried to do it short, you know, so he won't put it in the back of the end zone.
Right.
But even though if he did that, it would have been intercepted anyway. My whole thing was here, I think what happened was the guy was bearing down on him and he twisted his shoulder, I think, when he was throwing it. And it wasn't, you know, deep enough. I think you got to throw a jump ball in that predicament. That's just how it goes. But, you know, we can't be blaming the ref. A lot of people blaming the ref. Man, we got a lot of favorite calls during, you know, the run. So, I mean, in hindsight, sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't.
But yeah,
I want to say is that I noticed that as soon as Gronk and Amendola came back, right, We leave in Tompkins but Tompkins out of the picture. And I just want to say, I don't know why is that, but I just want to say since Gronk and Amendola came back, we are 2-2, and when without them, we was 4-1. I know Amendola played in the first game, but, you know, something about that just rubs me the wrong way. I think Tompkins deserves, even though he dropped some balls, whatever, I think he deserves to be on the field a lot more. And one other thing, I don't understand why we wait till the last minute to start going vertical down the field when they know we got to go vertical. Ain't it better to do it in the first quarter, second quarter, once or twice the series, take your shot? You know, the first, to got Carolina started, they did a big play to Steve Smith down the sideline. That started the whole thing. That pass started, and I wish we would try to do more of that early in the game instead of late in the game. But that's all I got to say. You guys have a good one.
All right, you too. Thanks for the call, Tyrone. Yeah, it's an interesting point. Why not try to stretch things out early in the game instead of saving it for the end of the game? And that might go along the whole lines of the play calling questions that we have with Josh McDaniels, and that goes with third and one. You just ran the ball down Carolina's throat. Why are you passing on third and one from the 8 and then just kicking the field goal? That made it 20-17 instead of potentially going in for a touchdown, which in the end maybe a tie game as opposed to the Patriots trailing late. I think the questions for that, well, I mean, obviously we'll continue into Sunday and we'll see the type of offense against Denver's defense, which the Patriots can score points against. They can score points. The problem is that Denver might score a little bit more against your defense when secondary is hurting, defense in general hurting, all the injuries that have happened over the course of the season. We'll wrap things up here on Patriots Playbook with one final email at webradio@patriots.com, if I can get back to it. And there it is. It is from Big Matt, Matthew. He says, first, there was another no call, and actually I do remember seeing this. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Ted Ginn scored and Cam Newton proceeded to throw the football about 25 rows into the crowd, isn't that a penalty? That might actually be a penalty. I don't think you're allowed to throw the football.
I think it's at the very least a fine.
Yeah, that might be it. It might just be a fine because you've seen earlier in the game, Cam Newton goes over and he hands the football to somebody in the crowd, and that actually might be a fine too. I remember reading something about that. Maybe just the throwing the football.
Yeah, screw the little kids getting souvenirs.
Yeah, well,
NFL needs that $95 to make that ball or whatever it is.
My guess is that the reason why it would be a fine for Newton throwing the ball into the end zone is what if he knocks someone's eye out throwing a spiral into the end zone.
Like Ralphie in Christmas Story, you don't want to put your eye
right.
out.
So I'm not sure if that's a penalty. If it is, that doesn't bother me. I don't want someone throwing the football into the crowd resulting in a penalty that changes a game. I mean, it's one thing to have a no call on a pass interference in the course of the game, but a guy throwing a football into the crowd, it's not really part of the game.
Doesn't do it for you, Sudi?
No.
Doesn't really grind your gears?
I wouldn't want to win, have a game-winning drive set up by that.
Oh, I would, as long as we win.
I mean,
now
you're appealing to the fan in me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. I want to win the game. But
by the way, you know, so just in case people don't know this about you, you grew up right down the road here in Sharon, didn't you?
I grew up right over the border.
Yeah, which is like literally a couple miles here from the stadium.
I swear to this day, and it might be true, the 1996 AFC Championship game when I was 10 or...
Yeah, we were like 10 or 11.
10 years old, and they won that game, and there were sirens and fireworks, and I could hear them clear from my bedroom. And I'm about, I don't know how many miles away.
And a Patriots fan was born?
8 miles? Well, I was already a fan.
I
was watching that game. Oh, I remember after the Super Bowl that year, I cried my eyes out.
Oh, I cried too.
I don't even know why.
Awful. It's kind of embarrassing thinking of a 10-year-old crying, but I did cry. My parents had to console me. My mom got me, like, specially made, like, giant, like, sugar cookies with, like, Patriots helmets and everything. I mean, we did everything out. And not only did they lose, but they got, I literally wanted, as a 10-year-old kid, wanted to fight Desmond Howard.
Oh, man, that was killer.
I wanted to take my butter knife off the table while eating dinner and stab him in the neck.
Whoa.
I wanted to kill him. Literally, wanted to kill him. I wanted vengeance. I wanted tiny 10-year-old Kevin vengeance.
Wow. That is... I think we're going to end the show on that.
I'm still an angry man to this day, but, you don't have to take the sharp objects away from me.
I think the Patriots have made up for that.
They have.
Just as like the Red Sox made up for 2003, where my buddy in his basement chucked a chair across the room. And then the next year, all was forgotten.
But I still hate Desmond Howard.
Yeah, and that Heisman pose and everything. Oh, yeah.
Just garbage.
Yeah, where'd he go to school? Michigan?
Michigan, just garbage.
Wait a minute.
I hate Michigan, too.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh. I don't know if Tom would like that.
I hate Michigan.
All right, that'll just about do it for Patriots Playbook here this afternoon. Scott Sudikoff filling in for John Rook. Glad to be with all of you here today. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your emails and your tweets. Actually, I don't think I got any tweets. That's kind of sad. No tweets, but plenty of emails, plenty of phone calls. Want to thank my producer extraordinaire, Kevin Collins, behind the glass for making everything go off without a hitch here today. Patriots Playbook back on the air tomorrow.
Tomorrow, we'll have Eric Friends from Boston.com.
So another fill-in,
And then I think you're back on Tuesday.
I'll be back here on Tuesday for Patriots Playbook to nitpick the Patriots-Broncos game
on
Sunday.
Which should be a fun game to nitpick.
That should be very fun, as John Rook will be on the process of coming back from the beautiful sunny skies of the Virgin Islands. So that's about it.
So thanks. Good job. We'll see you on Tuesday.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.